Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this August the 24th on the West Coast, August the 25th on the East Coast, and in the Central Time Zone. I'd like to welcome all those who may be listening in on Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world, and I'm looking forward to tonight's show. We had a last-minute change. I had Mr. Michael Fisher from the Fishers musical group, I should say the Fishers family, Michael is en route to a rally, a national rally, and assured me that he sort of spaced out and forgot he had made a commitment to the show. I was looking forward to playing some of his music, and I wanted to interview him about a current controversy regarding an original composition that he wrote that stirred up a lot of racial hatred, not because of any language that he used, but just the fact that a word was similar to another word, and basically people's ignorance led them to judge his selection of words. Actually, he was talking about something that he learned as a young boy from his grandmother and used a word that was used around the house regarding, I'm speaking of, the word reneger, one who reneges, or one who goes back on their word, back on a promise or a pledge. And it's a critical song. He did a second version of the same song called The Great Deceiver, and it works quite well in the song, but he had chosen the word he used because it was a word that he had grown up using, and it in no way is has any kind of racial undertones. It's just a description of any person that it goes back on that promise. So he's come out with a couple of new songs, actually, which underscore his convictions in regard to the Patriot movement and his role as a songwriter and somebody that can deliver a message in a different medium. Well, it got me thinking, and I had not much time to prepare, but I thought, you know, I don't get to play that much music. And, of course, if you want to listen to pop music, you can certainly tune into any AM or FM radio station, and there are thousands of them. But I thought I would honor some really fantastic musicianship, and I picked out a couple of live performances that I'd like to share. So we're going to play some music. I think it would be very healing for us too. And you may be familiar with this artist I'm going to primarily feature tonight. You may be familiar with the music or his name or his reputation. Nonetheless, I think to hear and to see him play an acoustic piano, and he's one who has performed with many famous musicians throughout his 40-year-plus musical career. He's played electronic music, and he's become somewhat of a purist, having a classical background but also a jazz background. And I think the reality of music sometimes, especially a pure performance, one which is technically masterful and at the same time filled with spirit, filled with soul, and can communicate that. I think even if you don't like jazz, you cannot listen to the musician I'm going to feature tonight without being in awe of his technique, his ideas, and the heartfelt, fervent way that he performs. He's very expressive with an acoustic grand piano. He's playing an excellent instrument, and it's very in tune. And so you're going to hear something quite different from what we usually do on this show. I'm going to feature the Keith Jarrett Trio, featuring on piano Keith Jarrett, on acoustic bass Gary Peacock, and on drums the world-renowned Jack DeJohnette. This is on Green Dolphin Street, live performance.
Thank you.
And that was the Keith Jarrett Trio. And I'm getting the feeling sort of tonight that this is FM radio on the internet. You can see these are fantastic musicians. Keith Jarrett, as I recall, was born on May 5th of 1945 in Allentown, Pennsylvania. He is actually a multi-instrumentalist. Plays not just piano, organ, which, believe it or not, even though it's a keyboard instrument, it's a very different instrument in how it's operated and certainly how it's played. Take that back, May 8th, I'm double-checking, but Allentown, Pennsylvania is his place of birth. I presume he has a certificate of live birth as well. He got his career started in a very unusual way. He began playing at the age of seven. He did his first concert, and he did six pieces and two original compositions. He graduated from Emmaus High School in Emmaus, Pennsylvania, and was influenced by many jazz musicians. But again, he had a classical background in the beginning. He was offered the opportunity to study with French pianist Nadia Boulanger, and he turned that down, ended up going to Boston, Massachusetts, and went to the Berklee College of Music. Back in those days, I think they just called it the Berklee School, but we're not talking about California. This is in Boston, Massachusetts, and it's a world-renowned music school. Many, many famous musicians attended that school, and some even began to be teachers there later on in their careers as they became professionals. One guitarist who comes to mind, John McLaughlin of the Mahavishnu Orchestra and Miles Davis fame. Keith Jarrett himself even worked with Miles Davis, but he began his career professionally, first playing in some of the Boston piano bar settings. And I'm sure while he went to school, that's a common practice there. In Boston, I spent some time there in the early to mid 70s and played with many of these musicians that attended Berklee. But he ended up in New York working with Art Blakey and the Jazz Messengers. Later on, he played with Charles Lloyd, and he moved on to Miles Davis at a time when Miles was using three different piano players. At a time, playing on the same gigs. He was doing concerts such as at the Fillmore, made some famous recordings there. And a number of pianists that he worked with were Chick Corea, Herbie Hancock prior to him, and then Keith Jarrett. And on some of these songs that Miles did when he started getting into the electronic music, he used all three of those piano players at the same time. Another player who was infused into the mix was a good friend of mine, Harold Ivory Williams from the Baltimore area. And Harold was a phenomenal keyboardist of all types. We would go into a mall when we were on the road. Went into a mall once in Schenectady, New York, and Harold sat there for 3 hours and gave a concert on all the different pianos, the Hammond organ, and he would play Bach on the organ and then Tchaikovsky on the piano, and then he would do impersonations of all the famous jazz organists, one after the other, Jimmy Smith, Jack McDuff, Jimmy McGriff, on and on, people you never heard of, and he was just fantastic. And so Keith comes from a similar background, except he was primarily into classical music until he had this opportunity to study with Madame Boulanger in Paris. And he decided that he would turn that down and devote himself more to the music that allowed him to express himself in some intangible ways in comparison to the opportunities that you have as a trained classical concert pianist. He had absolutely, or has, I should say, absolutely immaculate technique. And part of that technique is the amount of expression. To see him play, to see him get up out of the seat, not in the manner of Victor Borge, but as an expressive way to put all of his being into what he played. It's really something to see. And he does stand up and almost dancing while he's playing. And at times he'll scat, and yet his scat is sort of an unconscious way of involving himself in the music. He's not really trying to scat a la Ella Fitzgerald or Al Jarreau or even George Benson, who scats his melodic lines with his voice while he's playing them on his guitar. So I'm going to give you another example. This is from a concert he did in Tokyo in 1987. This is Keith Jarrett's rendition of Summertime. And that was Keith Jarrett playing Summertime in Tokyo, 1987. What comes to mind, if you like instrumental music, certainly this style of playing and this interpretation of a song is a way to get outside the box, even if it's just for 1 hour, maybe once a month. I try to bring music into the show, although we've been dealing with a lot of tangential issues going on in politics and government and the world financial community. And it's, for me anyway, it's quite different to be able to share this with you and acknowledge some really great musicians. No, it's not commercial, but then again, commercial is what it portends and pretends to be. It's a way to get people's consciousness steered in a particular direction, and it's very predictable. And what I love about jazz and anyone that loves jazz is the unpredictability of the music, the spontaneity of it, the instant creativity which is going on. As I listen to Summertime, and as I listen to the left-hand part that Keith Jarrett was employing throughout the piece, and I consider how difficult, if you ever tried to play the piano, or if you play the piano, you know, even as an accomplished pianist, to play an ostinato bass line with chord accompaniment and repeating it over and over can be sort of an automatic thing. But the creativity with the right hand, the independence that he exhibits, shows us an order. And there's reality, there's truth in how he plays. There's no pretension there. It's not anything other than what it is. And it allows you to use your imagination and at the same time really hear somebody play the instrument with all of its dynamic capabilities, all of its expressive capabilities. I'm going to play another song. This is from Tokyo also. Live concert with the Keith Jarrett Trio, featuring again on bass Gary Peacock and on drums Jack DeJohnette. All the Things You Are. that's too bad, the applause. And so quickly on that version of the recording, it's actually a video soundtrack. Keith Jarrett and his trio featuring Gary Peacock on bass, and also featuring Jack DeJohnette on drums. Now, there's a couple of songs that Keith played. I'm reminded of the general theme of the straw man concept and the subliminal message of the movie The Wizard of Oz. Harold Arlen, who composed the score on that movie, wrote some beautiful music. If you look at the music and sort of forget the general theme of the movie, directed towards humanity and how they've been duped by the central banks of the world and this whole process of conscripting people to debt without their knowledge, their clear knowledge of it. It's a dark movie in that sense, but the music, again, I repeat, is quite amazing. Particularly the theme song that Judy Garland sang. And this is another Japanese concert. I believe it was in 1987 also. This is Keith Jarrett playing Over the Rainbow, and this is in two parts. I'm going to play the first part, and the second part, he does an ostinato improvisation on that, and it's really a fantastic piece of music. You'll see for yourself here, Keith Jarrett and Over the Rainbow. Thank you. That was Keith Jarrett, or I should say that is Keith Jarrett. And I encourage you, if you want to listen to his music and to have your own recordings, he was an artist with many of the jazz labels. Atlantic Records is one that comes to mind. Also, he was a recording artist with Impulse, and the most notorious recordings he did as a soloist or with his trio was for the ECM label in Germany. Of course, he appeared with Miles Davis, who was under contract with Columbia Records. And I think there was a point where, as I mentioned earlier, he saw the limitations of electronic instruments, and back in those days, they were very electronic. I don't know his thoughts on digital instruments, but I can presume that being a purist of the acoustic instruments, he was bent on reviving or keeping, you know, the acoustic piano alive, especially the concert grand. He also played the soprano saxophone and some drums as well, and you can presume that he's every bit as good on those instruments. He gave up the soprano at one point and said that he regretted it. But you can see that's a person that's being who he came here to be, and we can celebrate the fact that jazz is totally American music. It's inspired by other types of music, but it was born here in America, and it's really the only true music that is purely American. Now, some may argue that, but I can tell you country music has its roots up in the mountains in many European countries. Don't believe me? Go over and spend some time in Switzerland or Italy or even Spain, France, Germany. The roots are there, harmonically speaking and in terms of song styles and structures. Now, the instruments have changed, and country music has changed in the last 10 to 20 years drastically, and it's taken on a more commercial pop-oriented tone. So as a musician, he's equally proficient in classical music, you can imagine. The show time doesn't allow us, but I also have another artist that I thought I would feature here. I did not make this recording. There is some heavy compression involved in it, in the loud portions, especially in the beginning of the piece. And this is a big band featuring some really well-known jazz musicians. Herbie Hancock's former Headhunters bassist Anthony Jackson is playing. Also, Lou Marini Jr., known from the Blood, Sweat, and Tears and the Blues Brothers band in the movie. And he's an Ohio boy whose father was a jazz professor at Bowling Green State University. And I took some classes with him back when I was still in high school at the famous Arrangers Clinic in Las Vegas. And so I got to rub shoulders with some accomplished musicians, composers, people that played with Frank Zappa, Frank Sinatra, the Franks, and the Buddy Rich Big Band. And this is a Latino piano player I'm going to feature here. Michel Camilo is his name, and this is the New York All-Star Big Band playing Caribe. We'll be right back. And that's Michelle Camilo and the New York All-Star Big Band performing one of Michelle's compositions called Caribe. And I guess it's the video compression combined with the audio compression in that codec that sort of crunches the sound when the band is really blaring. That fantastic lead trumpet was performed by well-known, world-renowned studio musician John Faddis, and all those people can play. That was a blinding tempo, and it demonstrates what freedom is in the arts. And if we can transmute that freedom into the worldwide movement to be free of oppression, certainly this music, something that can take you outside the box and expand your own creativity. I like all kinds of music, and I have featured many other kinds of music on this show, and the footprints lead to, or I should say the evident footprints lead to America's truly free music, and it's known as jazz. Much appreciated around the world, not just in Japan, but all throughout Europe for many, many years. It's amazing how we as a people have turned against music that was born here in this country, was inspired by slavery and the perceived escapement from slavery, and something that musicians of all races and all creeds, all nationalities can join in together and break down the walls of deception, break down the walls of prejudice, and we'll be featuring more of this type of music in the future in the show, if I hear from you and you enjoyed listening to it. We're limited by the technology as to how clear we can make this. This is being generated out of my studio and then transported across the country to BBS, and we're appreciative of the high stream rate that we have, and that's going to even be improving more. You're going to see new improvements at the BBS radio website. If you don't subscribe to Evident Footprints archives, I think you should. It's a way to help keep the show on the air. Believe it or not, somebody has to compensate the network for the bandwidth that's used, and certainly you can help out by signing up. It enables you or entitles you to all the archives on BBS Radio, not just Evident Footprints. And there are some changes that are going to be very visible to you in going through the archives. There's a new archival system being born as we speak, Don Newsom tells me, and I trust that that is the case. And we're going to continue to bring you quality shows night after night and throughout the day on BBS Radio. So that about wraps it up. Unfortunately, our scheduled guest couldn't make it tonight, but being the musician that I am, I figured, well, why not share some music with you? And I hope you enjoyed what you heard. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network around the world. Also want to thank Don Newsom on the sound at BBS Radio tonight. Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible. And most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me tomorrow night when my special guest will be none other than Dr. Michael Castle. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light. Do pray, and have a good night.